Hello and welcome to the £1 Movie Podcast. I'm your host Wayne, and this is a podcast about buying films from DVD shops like CDX and charity shops and places like that cost one British pound or less. They could be Oscar winners, they could be ultimate pieces of trash, but the point is we're going to watch them so you don't have to, and then decide if it is worth the pound I paid or not. On this episode I have a very special guest. I have Captain Moby from the Super Glued Wooden Pirates Podcast. Say hello, Captain Moby.
Hey, hello Wayne and the listeners. Good to be back. This is my second appearance on your podcast, Wayne. It's the sequel and I'm excited. Thanks for having me again.
It's the sequel. It's your second appearance, absolutely. Like I said, this is episode 12. I can't believe I made it to this episode 12 already. And on episode 12, we'll be talking about 1977's Grand Theft Auto. So, Grand Theft Auto from 1977, directed by Ron Howard, has an IMDb score of 5.4 out of 10, a Rotten Tomato score of 23%. It has got a certificate of a PG. It runs for 84 minutes, and it stars Ron Howard and Nancy Morgan amongst a very big ensemble cast, which I'm not going to bore you with. I'll read you the synopsis now from the back of the DVD, like I always do. Synopsis states this: teenage carnappers go wild in the funniest car movie ever. Can a young runaway couple get married in Vegas before two sets of parents, a jealous boyfriend, a private detective, and a mob of bounty hunters catch them? Ron Howard's classic directorial debut sees the greatest cars in the world destroyed. Directorial debut, Ben. That's the first thing.
Yeah, that's the draw for me. This film, I had it in my list, well, on my list rather, and in my pile for quite a while now to get around to watching, and I didn't until you said that you were going to be doing it on the podcast. So I thought, perfect chance for me to watch my copy of it. And yeah, that was the draw for me, was Ron Howard's directorial debut.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll give you a bit of background on the film here. This is a Roger Corman finance production. Roger Corman is the head of New World Pictures. If you don't know who Roger Corman is, Google him. He's a very prodigious producer, director, actor. He's done everything in the business, and he financed lots and lots of films in the late 70s and early 80s. Lots of exploitative films. You know, I think he was behind things like Star Beast. You know, there's always a reaction to when films come out, like when Alien comes out or when Star Wars comes out. People make sort of low budget versions of these films to capitalize on the hype, so they put these films out, and Roger Corman is one of those people. He did this in exchange for Ron Howard appearing in another film called Eat My Dust. So he said if Ron Howard appears in Eat My Dust, he'd finance Ron Howard's first directed film. He told Howard, do a really good job for me, kid, and you'll never have to work for me again. And as far as I'm aware, he didn't. So he must have done a good job. The film is written by Ron Howard and his dad, Rance Howard. Rance Howard has appeared in 15 of his son's directed films, including this one. I think he also appears in A Beautiful Mind. I did read the list. I think he's in Forrest Gump as well. Oh, that's Robert Zemeckis, isn't it? Why am I thinking Ron Howard and Forrest Gump? Oh, Apollo 13, isn't it? Ron Howard film.
Yeah, and that has Tom Hanks and Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah, that's the one. Gary Sinise, yeah. That's the one, yeah. Rance originally wanted to pitch this movie to Burt Reynolds, but his son got hold of it, and then, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. This film took 15 days to shoot and cost $602,000, and it grossed $15 million. That's not a bad return, really, is it?
That's it. Everything you just threw at me there, it's really insane to me. 15 days to knock a movie out.
15 days to knock this film out, yeah.
That is crazy, considering it's supposed to be some action-packed movie. Like, I'm thinking, how can you get this? It just tells me that Ron Howard was destined to be a director. If you can pull this movie
that's
in
the thing,
that
yeah.
quick.
Which you'll see if you're new to the podcast, you'll know that we haven't watched the film at this moment in time. I'm going to give you loads of spiel about it, give you loads of background, and then we'll break for an intermission and go and watch the film. So at this moment in time, it could be that it's just one of those Roger Corman schlocky, let's not worry about it, and oh yeah, glad Ron Howard moved on to better things, or it could be something decent. So we shall wait and see. Give you a bit of background now. This is good because Ron Howard is also the director and the star of this film, so I only have to do this one bit for him. So Ron Howard plays Sam Freeman in the film. I mean, obviously Ron Howard, probably for my generation, maybe yours as well, Ben, obviously famous for playing Richie Cunningham in the Happy Days sitcom. He's been in loads of stuff, absolutely loads of stuff. When I was researching him, he's been in an episode of The Twilight Zone right the way through to MASH. His first film is this film called Frontier Woman. He's also in John Wayne's last film, The Shootist. George Lucas's second film, American Graffiti and American Graffiti 2. I was amazed in researching about his career, to be honest. He's prodigious. That's the only word to use for him. 87 actor credits, 103 producer credits, and 48 director credits, as well as winning two Oscars, one for A Beautiful Mind. That is, it's hell of a, just looking through, you don't really, I mean, Ron Howard's been there since, you know, before I was born, but I sort of grew up with Ron Howard, the same as everybody else. So to look at his,
just,
go on.
Sorry, go on.
Go on.
I was going to say, he just seems to have always been there.
And yeah,
he's
exactly.
Always, he's been, obviously Happy Days is the one that I always knew, like as a kid it was on the TV and that, but as you get older and you get into film, you know, his career is vast and ridiculous, like he just, and his family, the whole family just love it, don't they? They're either actors,
yeah,
or producers or something. His daughter Bryce Dallas Howard,
yeah, of course, yeah,
you know, she's huge, she's won awards and that, she's a great actress, and it's just in the blood apparently.
Yeah, it's just, there's something in the water at the Howard family residence, isn't it? Yeah. We move on to Nancy Morgan next. She plays Paula Powers in Grand Theft Auto. Couldn't find out much about Nancy Morgan, really. A couple of interesting facts. She was married to John Ritter. This was her second film, her first being a drama called Fraternity Row. And she also turns up an episode of Shazam, the TV series from 1976. Did you know there was a Shazam series?
I did not know that. Look, what do you mean? Which Shazam are we talking about?
We're talking about DC's Shazam.
Oh, no. That's crazy. I'd love to see some snippets of that, because I've seen some dodgy early versions of Marvel and DC movies and TV shows that are just hilarious.
Well, it's,
so
just
I'd love
that.
To see that.
I just from the front cover of it on IMDb, I went, yeah, it's just one of them. It's just like the Incredible Hulk, and it's just like Captain America and all those things from the 70s and 80s that Marvel tried their hand at TV. It just looks like that.
That's my problem, you know, like stuff like that. I should be like, yeah, I'll never watch it now, but in my mind, I'm like, I need to see this. I need to waste my time watching this crap when I could watch new stuff.
Brilliant. The critical response to this. So we go for Real Films Reviews, David Nusser. Grand Theft Auto has cemented its place as a passable debut that runs out of steam long before it reaches its long before it reaches its crowd-pleasing conclusion. Can't say crowd for some reason this afternoon. eFilmCritic.com, Pamela Harlan, said, there are no less than 24 explosions, 23 cars destroyed, 11 stolen vehicles, and 3 obscene gestures, all within GTA.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah, all within GTA's paltry 84-minute running time. Howard, no doubt, wanted to break records with his directorial debut and overturn over-directed the campy, goofy, and sometimes absurd, but always forgivable, trite talk GTA is... Oh, hang on. Is that right? Trite talk? Always forgivable, trite talk. Oh, yeah, I missed a full stop. GTA is absolutely outdated. However, the film is no less...
Welcome to Learning to Read with Wayne Saunders and Ben Mowbray.
The worst thing is, it's my writing.
that's the good excuse then. Yeah, you need to write it a bit better.
Yeah, I need to break it down. Yeah, my joined up writing is like a doctor's, apparently. Fucking hell.
Yeah, did one of your kids write this for you in crayon?
Oh, no, because they can write better than me. However, the film is no less nostalgic fun. There you go. I just missed that completely. Right, so I'll give you all that, Ben, broken as it was. What's your expectation after all that?
I think it's going to be amazing. I know it's like an old movie, so I'm guessing it's not going to look as good as Fast and Furious type car chasing explosions, but I'm sure we're going to get a cool 70s vibe, a bit like a Steve McQueen movie or something. So, yeah, I've got high hopes for this. I've wanted to watch it for a while, and now I'm finally going to do it, and I'm excited.
Cool. I've got somewhere between Smokey and the Bandit and Badlands, but obviously with a lot lighter tone than Badlands. I always find Ron Howard watchable, and I'm expecting more of the same self-assured character he played in American Graffiti. You know, that sort of likeable chappy.
Yeah, he's going to be Richard Cunningham, basically, I think.
Yeah, maybe that's... Yeah, he was known for that right at that time, wasn't he? And just judging from what I've read, what I've looked into, I'm expecting a mad-capped, almost Looney Tunes-type action and pace. So,
yes. That's what I'm hoping for, something that's like Wacky Races, but live action.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're new to this podcast, or if not, you know what's going to happen now. If you're new to the podcast, you're not going to know what's happening. But if you're not new, you know what's coming. We are going to break for an intermission. Okay, we're back. We've been and watched the film after the intermission, and just to let you all know from here on in, spoilers, massive spoilers ahead. We were going to talk about the whole film from start to finish. So if you are intending on watching Grand Theft Auto with Ron Howard, stop the podcast now, go and have a listen, come back and see if you agree. Otherwise, if you're listening from here on out, you're going to know the hell, you know, you're going to know all the plot of the film by the end of this. So spoilers ahead. So, Ben, just watch the film. Initial reaction?
Oh, that was great. It was exactly what I wanted. I'm so happy that I've seen it. I was slightly worried. I thought, oh, I hope it's good because I want it to be good, and I'm going to be gutted if it's not, and it wasn't. It was fantastic. Obviously, you know, it's a 70s movie, so it's nothing... like I said, the effects weren't going to be great, and they're still good. This is good, man. This is... you can enjoy this in 2021. It's solid. It stands the test of time. I'm rather excited, Wayne. I really, really love this film.
yeah, I agree. It's fun. It's fast. It's very sweary for a PG as well.
You said at the beginning when you were describing it, saying there's obscene gestures. And what was they? What were they? Just like somebody flipping the bird?
Oh, no, we'll come to it in a bit. But yeah, it's very sweary for a PG, I've wrote down. I'm unsure of the chemistry between I forgot their bloody names, between Ron Howard and Nancy Morgan. But apart from that, really enjoyed it. And my only other question is, do any of the cars in Grand Theft Auto have brakes?
I guess not. It's like somebody's cut the brakes on all of them because nobody ever brakes in time.
Every car in the central Los Angeles / California area had its brakes cut for this film. That's what happened. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and there's like no speed limit anywhere in the movie.
All right, we're going to start from the start, right the way through to the film. So we start at a mansion where we see Sam, who is Ron Howard's character, has asked Paula's parents, who is Nancy Morgan, for her hand in marriage. And Bigsby Powers, who is running for governor, has not taken lightly to the news here. And Paula's mom brings up that she's engaged to someone else. Paula tells Sam to go, and she'll meet him down the road. At this point, Paula storms off out the room after a bit of a confrontation between her mom and dad and climbs out of her window. She disables her own car and then steals her dad's Rolls-Royce Phantom. Nice car, that.
Mm-hmm.
Not my choice for a car chase, a Rolls-Royce. I think it's a bit of a lumbering, you know, it's very heavy, and it's not the kind of car you'd take across country, let's put it that way.
Absolutely not. I don't think their intention was to even be involved in any kind of car chase. We should take this car and we'll be all right. They weren't expecting the adventure they inevitably went on.
So she steals the Rolls-Royce, she goes and picks up Sam at the end of the road, and they share one of the worst, absolutely awful first kisses, or full-on kiss I've ever seen in a film. It's like they're trying to eat each other's noses. It's, yeah.
I must say, you mentioned the chemistry now, this kiss. It's like, I didn't believe they were in love at all. If I've got to be critical, they did not convince me that they were a loving couple.
I felt like they were just trying to, each one of them was trying to put their lips over the other one's lips as far as they could. I don't know who won that battle, to be fair, though. So then they go on the run. Bigsby tries to follow and instantly finds out this car's been stolen. So he phones, I guess that he's like a fixer. He phones his fixer, who is played by Ron Howard's dad. The kids are drunk on each other.
I can't believe it. I can't believe we're actually doing this. Incredible.
Yeah. I'm sorry your parents don't like me better, though.
Don't worry. I like you enough for both of them.
Okay, that's it. You want to pull over and fool around a little?
And we learn that they are heading to Vegas for a shotgun wedding. We now meet Colin, who is the other fiancé. He is a... there's no other way to do this. He's a rich fucking 80s douchebag. That's it.
Absolutely. And he's got a lisp. I don't know why it annoyed me, but it annoyed me more so. His character having that lisp, he was more of a dick. No offence to people with lisps, but this guy just really annoyed me. I suppose he played it well then, because he's a prick and he's supposed to be.
He's calling from the stables of his polo club. So that's all you need to know. I mean, this is definitely, you know, class versus... it's a class struggle, this entire film. And he speaks to Paula's mum, and Paula's mum tells him what's happening. So he immediately leaves, jumps in his bright yellow Porsche Carrera. I think it's a Carrera anyway. And he takes after Paula. He calls her from the car phone, because I didn't even know car phones were a thing in 1980. And how has he got Bigsby's number? That's the next thing. How does he call the Rolls-Royce? Has he got Bigsby's number on speed dial? That's one.
I know, mate. There's a lot of this kind of stuff in the movie you could just literally pull apart.
Yeah, it's one of them.
I thought the same. I thought car phones out in the late 70s. I guess they were.
I'm bringing this up, right, because I actually really enjoyed the film. I'm bringing this up just to throw it in there. If you like a film, you'll forgive its flaws, and I forgive this film its flaws. He says that he's the one for her, and then he totals his Porsche completely while still in his polo gear.
Hey, man, you left your lights on.
Colin's mum now gets involved and starts chasing her son in the helps of VW. This was kind of rough for it, you know. She runs out of car, finds her own car, so just steals, I think it's a gardener or a butler's VW Beetle. Do you remember that bit?
Yeah, but, I mean, like you say, it's a rich person doing what the fuck they want.
Yeah,
they
exactly.
They can just get away with it, and the film is littered with that. And I love the message, yeah. You know, at the end of the day, you can't. You rich bastards. If you have a Porsche Carrera and you play polo, I'm just saying this now, I'm just putting that out there, my opinion, tosser!
Colin now, as you were saying, rich people just do what they want. Colin now goes to a car lot after he's totaled his Porsche, and he steals a Dodge Charger. Now, this is very... I'll come to this in a bit again, but this is very Vanishing Point, and there's a I'll bring that up because Vanishing Point uses a Dodge Challenger, and there's lots of desert shots with that as well. Mm-hmm. He steals it from a car dealership, and he drives it through the car dealership for some reason. He reverses it through the window, and then comes back out through the front door. You know, massive carnage. I don't know why he does this, other than he's an absolute rich prick, and you know the film's gearing you up to hate him, which, you know, they're doing a good job of, to be honest.
Yeah, it's absolutely unnecessary to reverse and smash through the window. What the fuck?
He catches up with
hilarious.
He catches up with Sam and Paula and angrily waves his riding crop out the window like some fucking idiot at them on the freeway. They then take a turning off the freeway, and he crashes his car. Well, he tells them he's a really good driver as he flips the stolen car. He crawls out the wreckage, he phones the radio station, very Vanishing Point again here, and he speaks to Squirrely Curly, who's the DJ, and he offers £25,000 for the return of Paula from Sam, who's been kidnapping her, and he's a rapist. This is PG, right?
That's a good point. You know, I never even thought about the rating. PG, holy shit.
Kidnapping and rapist, apparently. That's what he's been doing with Paula. What follows then is a montage of people jumping in their cars and taking off from work to taking up the chase. I mean, 25 grand in 1980. It's got to be, what, 250 grand in today's money? Including a pair of mechanics who steal one of the cars they're working on. And one of the mechanics is played by Clint Howard, who is Ron Howard's brother.
And the ugliest of all the Howards.
He's the guy who turns up, if you're not sure who Clint Howard is, he's the guy who turns up in Waterboy. Is he? Is one of the Gators' best fans?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, that's the fella, isn't it? Yeah.
He's in a shit load of stuff like that, like smaller roles in big comedians' films and that. And I think when they just need somebody really weird looking, that he just gets hired.
We then go back to Colin's mum, who's played by Marion Ross. Marion Ross is Mrs. Cunningham from the Happy Days series, so obviously Ron Howard's pulled a couple of favours in here. She gets chased by the police, and after she speeds through a red light, she then hits a tree in front of a church group, and after learning about the 25 grand reward, the preacher of the church group then steals the policeman's car.
What in the Lord's name are you doing?
$25,000. Now that's a lot of Bibles, baby.
It was one of my favourite moments, that was. I was like, man, you just changed quick.
Well, you know, it's all about serving the church. Fuck civil obedience. Let's serve the church.
So. Pretty much, yeah. I mean, is a quote you're going to say, this one? $25,000, that's a hell of a lot of Bibles.
That's exactly the line.
We both wrote that down because it's just so good.
Paula calls the radio station and tells them there's no abduction or rape. PG, remember people? PG. Paula's dad's men, Rance Howard's men, are in a helicopter and they're relaying the location of the Rolls Royce to agents in cars. How much money has this man actually got that he can afford like a private security firm to just jump in a helicopter at whim to go and chase his daughter across a desert? It's crazy. Mate,
there's an endless supply of money coming from somewhere, because it just gets crazy. Like you said about the other fiance, he's already crashed his own car, plus a car that he's stolen, and he's not even battered an eyelid. You know, how much money have these assholes got?
It's ridiculous, yeah. The preacher then starts chasing Colin for some reason. Do we know why the preacher chases Colin?
At this point, it's getting a bit convoluted, and you don't know who's doing what, really. So I was just in for the ride at this point, so I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, so Colin's still in the... what's Colin driving now? Oh, yeah, sorry, Colin stole a pickup truck, hasn't he, at this point? I forgot about that. Or has he? Has he? I can't remember. Yes, he has. He stole a pickup truck. I must have missed a point here, sorry. Yeah, he stole a pickup truck. And the preacher who's in the policeman's car is now chasing Colin in this pickup, but you don't know why. It's never explained. It's just like they're just chasing each other, and it's mental. After causing another car to crash into a shed being towed by a tractor, does the farmer swear? I've listened to this back three times, and I'll play the quote right now. Does he swear, Ben?
You goddamn chicken fucker!
Ooh, I can't, I don't know. I don't know what to say there.
There's lots of pisses, there's lots of shits in this film, that's fine. At this point, the farmer says, you absolute chicken fucker.
Oh my God. he does swear, of course he swears.
Hey everybody, come and watch my film. It's all about abduction, rapes and chicken fucking.
You have never seen a PG movie like this before. That's a guarantee. I know if you Back to the Future is a PG, and that's got an almost rape scene in it. So I don't know, mate. Things back in the day, just they could get away with more.
Yeah, I'm going with it because they turn the volume down ever so slightly as he says it. So he's like, oh, you motherfucker, chicken fucker, and he's like, but I listened to it three times. I was like, yep, he swears absolutely. Sam and Paul are chased by the mechanics at this point, which results in a three-wheel car they've stolen blowing up for some reason. Just goes beyond some rocks after they abandon it, and it just blows up. Sam and Paula at this point, because of being chased, hit the back roads where they run into Paula's dad's agents. Paula creates a dust bowl really cleverly by spinning the Rolls Royce round and round, and the agents who are employed by Paula's dad crash into each other, and it totals three more cars. These agents then steal a 4x4 from two guys. Why have these two guys turned up in the middle of the desert in this 4x4 to take pictures in front of this wreckage? Is that what they do every day? What you fancy doing today? Do you fancy just driving across the desert and trying to find some wreckages, take some pictures in front of? Yeah, let's do that. I don't know what they're doing there.
There's a lot of scenes out there in the movie. Just like, why? I don't know. I can't explain that one away.
Yeah, it's feeding back into that madcap thing. You know, it is what it is. This saffness.
It's just another stupid little joke to throw in there to give you a quick cheap laugh and don't think too hard about it. Basically, don't do a whole podcast on why this movie's crazy. That's what they wasn't expecting.
So Paula and Sam stop for fuel at the gas station, and the gas station owner recognises them and sends his men off for some reason to blow up the bridge. As Paula and Sam drive off and they go over this bridge blows up after they've crossed it. Now, did these men intend to blow the bridge up with them on it?
Well, I was thinking this. I thought, mate, I don't know. Because if you blow it before they get across it, then they're on the other side. If you wait till they're over your side and you blow it up, what's the point of that? So, yeah, I guess this, to kill him.
Yeah, if you blow the bridge up with them on it, are you going to try and claim the 25 grand reward for her charred remains?
Yeah, at least you stop the wedding.
Again, this is what I said at the start. Do any of the cars in this film have brakes? Because a lot of these crashes could be avoided just by tapping the centre brake pedal. They just keep going.
It's a lot more cooler in movies to not use the brake and just steer in a different direction and just hit something. That's what the aim is there, I guess.
Colin and the preacher catch up with Sam and Paula at this point, and Colin wrecks yet another car. The preacher picks Colin up and they keep pursuing. And the DJ is keeping everyone up to date over the radio, telling everybody where Sam and Paula are because, you know, they're the love couple and they need to get to Vegas, and, you know, he's trying to rouse support for them. Sam rings the DJ and asks him to stop telling everybody where they are.
Sam Freeman, the man of the moment.
How you doing, Sam?
You're full of crap, you know that, Curly? You make a big deal about wishing us good luck and then you tell everybody where we are.
Sam.
I want you to cut it out.
Sam, you created this situation, I didn't.
But you went to a hell of a lot of trouble to make it a great human interest story, didn't you, Curly? Now you're sitting up there broadcasting to the whole world. Right down here, ladies and gentlemen, stop the Vegas-bound lovers and hit the $25,000 jackpot. You're just hovering up there like a lousy vulture hoping for a wreck.
Well, if you have it, I'm going to report it. Because every time you turn around and fart, it's news.
You say anything you want. But just don't pinpoint us on the map.
Paula's dad, now with the agents, heads straight for them on the back roads. Do you remember this scene where they have like a chicken race straight at each other?
Yeah.
What? Are you trying to kill your daughter? I don't understand.
It's bizarre. Again, like, what is the thinking behind that?
Well, like, they get past this, and then the next scene I thought was one of the best stunts in the film. This is where the Rolls-Royce heads straight for a helicopter that's sort of coming down to the road, and the helicopter pulls out the way at the last minute. And I think it's a bit of forced perspective, But I thought it was absolutely fantastic the way they did it. They do it twice as well. So the helicopter comes down to to the road, and the Rolls Royce heads straight for it, and the helicopter pulls out the way at the last minute. And then they do it again. I thought that was, you know, for a 1980s film with a budget of $500,000, I thought it was fucking brilliant. It was absolutely class there.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I was looking immediately at different shot choices. Not that I know what I'm doing as a director or anything like that. But knowing that it's the directional debut, I thought, let's see what he's done here. Let's see how creative he's tried to be. And I was impressed, obviously, with a lot of the car chasing and stuff. But that helicopter, like you say, that was really cool. And it never felt cheap or it never felt amateur. It felt like he'd been making movies forever already.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we cut back to the van. Let's try to ram the star-crossed lovers off the road. It's got Paula's dad in it, and also Rance Howard, who he's going to go and call the big guns. Now, at this point, he jumps out of a moving van, and it actually looks like Rance Howard. So they've either got a stunt double who looks exactly like him, or Rance Howard did this stunt. What you reckon?
It wouldn't surprise me if he did it himself, just because he's thinking it's my son's directional debut, and it'll be cool to say I did it. I feel like I'm man enough to do it. Could be a pride thing. Yeah, I think it was him.
Yeah, I was going like, he must have said, do you want to do this, Dad? I'll get the stuntman in. And his dad's gone, nah, it's only 10 miles an hour. I can keep up with that. He didn't. He fell the fuck over, straight in his face. But, you know. Yeah, I mean, certainly looks like him, and fair play to him if he does that. So he calls in the Vegas muscle. Sam gets upset at this point, and he's saying to Paula that this has turned into a massive circus now. It's ridiculous. And Paula's only interested in bettering her dad.
I don't think it should be what I want or what you want. I just think it should be what we want, what's right for us.
That's what I've been trying to do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You took your father's car. You didn't work it out with your ex-fiancé.
He was never my fiancé.
Oh, whatever he was, he turned the whole thing into a carnival. On top of that, you flatly refused to change our destination, even though we got God knows how many nuts out trying to stop us. Now, let me tell you something. That was not us making those decisions.
You're really making me mad, Sam.
Sam and Paula get back on the back roads. The bridge demolition experts from earlier in the film and the gas station owner show up, and they start using dynamite at this point. So forget trying to blow them up. Let's just actually blow them up with dynamite.
Now it's turned into a proper Looney Tunes kind of cartoon.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
There's dynamite being thrown willy-nilly. How much have they got? Because this never-ending supply just keeps being thrown at vehicles.
It's crazy. And then they accidentally blow up a car that's been stopped by the police as well, so that just randomly somebody's just lost their car because of these bloody rednecks. Sam and Paul have finally crossed the border into Nevada. I haven't reached Nevada yet, and they've got all this carnage. Sam is still upset about being in the middle between Paula's dad and everything that's happened, and not changing destination when he said they should, and the ex-fiance, you name it. I mean, yeah, it's all against these girls, and being poor. But he romantically says at the end of this woe is me speech, we've gone this far.
Yeah, we may as well just get married then anyway.
Oh, yeah, we've gone this far, so we may as well. Oh, you old romantic, Ron Howard, you. Oh. It actually, he says, we've gone this far, we may as well go through with it. Romance. It just isn't dead in the 80s at all, is it?
I was going to say, not in the slightest. Like, the romance there, I can tell it's true. Like I say, I didn't believe they were in love to begin with. And now at this point, I'm like, why are you bothering? You're all going to get arrested as soon as you come out of church anyway, by the sounds of things.
Yes, well, we'll get to that. All parties converge now. Everybody who's chasing Sam and Paula, including Sam and Paula, turn up in this town on the outskirts of Vegas. Sam, who is now behind the wheel of the Rolls Royce, manages to jump this unbelievably heavy British-built car off the back of a ramp off the back of this wagon. Why are the ramps down in these films, Ben? I've never understood that. You parked your semi-truck that's carrying, you know, many cars and that. Why, if it's empty, why do you drop the back down? Is it so people can go, oh, I've got 10 minutes to spare, I'm going to go and jump down the main street? I never get it.
it's always just like in the perfect place and everything as well. Yeah
so
movies, they're just so, like, it's almost like somebody made it up.
Yeah, handy though, to be fair. Handy though. So they jump over Paula's dad's van. The dynamite guys then throw some dynamite into the back of a police car, which has got the preacher and Colin in. It then explodes as they attempt to do the same as what Sam's just done and jump off the back of that trailer. So in the air it explodes. Another cracking stunt. Really, really fun. Probably not for the stuntman who was driving it, but for us, like, watching it, was great. The Vegas muscle show up at this point now, and so they tried to blow her up. They tried to run her off the road. They tried to take her down with a helicopter, and now they've got the Vegas muscle who have turned up and start taking sniper shots at her. I mean, I don't know what to say about that, to be honest. I don't think it's idea with your daughter in the car, but, you know.
No, not at all. At the time, I was watching it, and I was just laughing, and I was just sucked in, and now you're saying all this. It's like, really, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen the movie, it sounds very, very sinister, and it could be a horror movie.
To change the tone of the film, change the colour tone of the film, and change the music. Yeah, this is a horror film. But, yeah. I mean, I'll make an observation here. The Vegas Muscle, who we've been threatened throughout the, like, through like the second to the third part of the film, they amount to nothing. That's pretty much all they do. They take a couple of pot shots at Paula and Sam in the car. That's it. There's nothing else. They end up at a demolition derby, because of course they do. There's nowhere else to go, is there?
Where do you go from here? Moment, yeah. Obviously, let's just smash up any remaining cars.
Virtually every car in the arena seems to be after him. Sam is dodging, eluding, twisting, and turning. He's one heck of a driver, ladies and gentlemen. Look at that son of a bitch drive!
Oh, mate, what can you say?
The Rolls get surrounded by the demolition derby cars. Sam and Paula jump out, and the brave little Rolls-Royce that could is now absolute toast and smashed to pieces. All the cars that have been involved in the chase now get totaled and explode, because of course they would. And Paula and Sam head off through the carnage and up through the bleachers of the Destruction Derby crowd, being pursued by Paula's dad and everyone else at the same time. They escape with the help of the crowd, who let Paula and Sam through and stop everybody else. And then everybody gets arrested by this policeman who's been following them as well. That amounts to nothing. That's why I haven't brought it up.
Yeah, that cop never really does anything.
No, he doesn't, no.
When they're trying to escape, they're running around in that arena for quite a while. And I can't believe they didn't get hit, because the cars in the background are going mental and smashing up everywhere. And they're just managing to dodge them.
Bigsby and Colin have a confrontation. Colin's mom's there as well. And Colin's mom's being really nasty about Paula. And Colin's dad does the right thing and puts Colin on his arse. Because Colin's mum insults Paula. Finally, he's got a bit of backbone. Finally, he's realised that this guy's an absolute arsehole. Sam and Paula make it to the church and finally get married. They get into a free limousine and they're on their way to a free hotel. They're pursued by the DJ, who's been out throughout this film, who loses control. Again, no brakes on this car whatsoever. He drives straight through a house. I mean, through the house, not stopping in the window. Goes through the kitchen, through the living room, everywhere. Comes out the back door and ends up in a massive paddling pool.
Was this house made of straw or something?
I have no idea.
Literally straight through, no problem.
It's ridiculous. Water everywhere. Like I say, no brakes on this car. And he's giving a running commentary as he's doing it. I've just gone through the window. I'm through the front door. I'm just crossing the threshold into the kitchen, out the back door.
It is a full-on comedy. It must be said that Ron Howard must have known, like, all these absurdities that he's throwing in there, things that don't make sense or continuity errors or whatever. It's all for comedy. It's got to be.
Absolutely. We finish up here with Sam says to Paula, or Paula says to Sam, I think it is.
Where do you think we'll be in our 50th wedding anniversary?
Right here. I'm not getting out of the car.
And after all this shenanigans and cars blowing up and everything, the end. So we've reached the party. This is the roundup, the reality of what we've just watched. So tell me your thoughts then, Ben.
Fantastic. I love this movie. It's more than I expected it to be, if anything. I thought I was going to get a kick out of it and then be done with it. But, you know, I think I could watch this again. It's one of those movies that I want an excuse to watch again. I want to show somebody. I say, oh, check this film out with me. And I can watch it again and have a good reason to.
Absolutely. I mean, this is obviously surfing the whole road trip movie vibe of the 70s. You know, talking about, like I said in there, when we were talking about Vanishing Point, talking about that, Smoking the Bandit was very big at this point. There's a film called Electric Glide in Blue. They're all sort of those films that take place as a road movie, and there's always deserts involved, and there's always that sort of thing. A lot of the shots in this reminded me of Vanishing Point. And if you haven't seen Vanishing Point, go watch that film. It is fucking brilliant.
It reminded me of a film, you probably know this, Mad, Mad, Mad World.
Mad, 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 Mad World, yeah, that's the one, yeah.
That's the same kind of situation as, like, car chases, and everybody's going to the same place because they're after some money, aren't they, like some inheritance, so there's like a race against time to get there first, and a very similar slapstick kind of movie.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you completely. The whole Looney Tunes vibe of this, and the whole slapstick, you know, crashing cars and there's no consequence. Like you say, they'd come straight out of that church. They'd be going to prison, the pair of them, because of what they should have just stopped. They've caused all this carnage. They are, whether they were involved in any of the crashes or not, they are the main perpetrators. So they get married and then spend their honeymoon in cells. That's exactly what would happen to them. But we're not going to digest on that at all. I mean, the film...
because they come out of the church and a guy from a hotel in Las Vegas gives them the honeymoon suite and all this stuff.
things work differently in Nevada, obviously. They really do.
Yeah, they have their own laws.
I mean, there's great stunts right the way through. I really like the ensemble cast. It's an easy story that was exactly what I thought it would be. You know, it's a bit less Smokey and the Bandit. It's very Blues Brothers before Blues Brothers. I mean, this is a year before Blues Brothers was released, so, but it's very much in that vein. Cannonball Run as well, those sort of films.
Yes.
If you like both of those films, you will like Grand Theft Auto. It's that simple. If you like Blues Brothers, you'll like Grand Theft Auto. It's just fun, and it sits there really nicely. You could watch those three together and have a lot of fun with them.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Did you find any connection between this movie and the game? Like, did they just take the name then, I guess?
Well, Grand Theft Auto is what happens if you steal a car in America. That's what you get charged with, isn't it? Grand Theft Auto, so I just assume it's that. You know, there's lots of cars being stolen, so...
Absolutely, totally agree. It's just that the cover looks suspiciously like Grand Theft Auto 3, so I'm thinking perhaps it was just like a homage to that, I guess.
It could be a case of that they're doing that on purpose with the cover from the DVD, which I'm looking at right now, because this DVD wasn't released until, I think, like 2002 or something like that. So it could just be that they were surfing that you know, Grand Theft Auto thing of how it looks, so you sort of identify with it and it's something new to look at. I like the friction between Sam and Paula as the film progresses, which is something that some films would have skated over. The fact that he does go, I'm not sure we should get married because of what you're doing here. You know, they're both likeable. I mean, Nancy Morgan in this is just as cute as a bloody button. I absolutely adored her. I thought she was fantastic.
Yeah, totally. The performances are bang on. It's just that I didn't buy them being in love. And no. In reality, if all that needed to happen to stop this movie happening was them two go to the parents and say, look, we're going to get married. All the parents had to do is say, no, well, let's hang on a minute. We're happy that you found someone you love and you don't want to marry the other guy. So, but just can you hold off the wedding for a bit? And they'd be like, oh, okay, that makes sense. End of movie. You know, because the parents overreacted how they did. Then,
12, yeah. Ron Howard's first directed film is a 12-minute short.
Yeah.
I mean, talking about Ron Howard, his first directed film, I thought it was really well accomplished. You know, the stunts and that. What I read about him on set as well, people were, a lot of the crew were like seasoned veterans, and they were Roger Corman, seasoned veterans, so they used to working with first-time directors. And they were a bit like, we'll see what happens here with these guys, you know, we'll see what happens. But apparently he took charge on the first day and he knew exactly what he was going to do. So... that sort of...
he was destined.
Absolutely.
I think this is one of his best films. I know he's done some crackers. You know, what's that? The Da Vinci Code. I think that's shit. I'm not a fan of those. But I like Rush. Have you seen Rush?
Yes, Rush. I forgot he directed that. Rush is bloody fantastic, yeah.
There you go, man. The guy, he's got some films out there I'm not a fan of, but he's got some brilliant ones. And yeah. Now I would hold this up there with some of the best ones, Grand Theft Auto.
I mean, for his first film, this is incredibly ambitious. If I was going to have a go at directing a film and I'd got his background, I'd probably try a little character drama with just like setting a house or something. But not Ron Howard. He wants to take you across states and blow shit up. Repeatedly, so
yeah, it's almost like early Michael Bay. You know what I mean? You think where his career went? If you told me that Ron Howard ended up doing Transformers movies after seeing this movie, I'd believe it.
Right, so we've reached that point now. We're going to break for the verdict.
Gentlemen of the jury, reads the verdict.
Considering all the facts and arguments presented by both counsel, and after careful deliberation.
The jury will retire and consider the evidence.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
Better be judged!
So, right, the verdict then, Ben. Tell me exactly what you think about this right now.
Is this worth a pound? Is that what you're asking me?
Tell me how much you would pay for it out of a pound.
Now I've seen it, if I was to have paid £5, I would have been happy. I wouldn't have minded. I'd be like, yeah, it's definitely worth a fiver. Wow. I actually paid nothing for this. It's got a £1.99 sticker on it, but it's one of those where, you know, somebody's getting rid of all the DVDs and they're like, anybody want these? I'm like that guy who always takes them. And I did that recently and that was in there. I was like, fantastic, I've always wanted this one. And it was definitely worth having for free. It's definitely worth £1.99. It's definitely worth at least a fiver. So if you got it for £1, you got a bargain. I reckon you should buy more copies and give them out to your friends.
I agree. It's fun, it's bright, little attention needed right the way throughout. Some of the point of view shots from on top of the on top of the vehicles. You know, they get a bit Benny Hill at times. They speed the footage up, but it's all in keeping with the character of the film. Nothing took me out there. It's, you know, the Looney Tunes aspect of it is right there. The plot races along. There's barely room to breathe all the way through. The douchebag, Colin, he's great. He's one of the great film douchebags I've seen in a long time. He's an absolute fucking prick. Love him. And if you're a Ron Howard completist or you fancy something fun, you got to check this out. I'll pay £1 for this, and I'd be happy to pay 75p if it was on any other day. So I'm going to put you down as saying yes, you'd pay £1, Ben.
100%, I would pay £1 for this movie. Yes, right. It's brilliant.
And I'd pay 75p. So via the law of averages, Grand Theft Auto gets 87 pence. That's how much we'd pay in total.
Why have you put down 75p?
Because I'd put that. That's what I'd pay for it.
You type bastard.
70. Yeah, but you know what I mean? Some of these films, I've got to be objective here. Some of these films I'm paying £1 for, and they're worth more than that. You know what I mean? So
I totally agree. I mean, but Grand Theft Auto, I don't know, that it should definitely be worth £1, in my opinion.
Well, it was. I'm just saying, for objective sake, I'll pay 75p. You know, I've already paid the £1 for it. Some of these films, you know, I paid 30p for one of them, and I've given it a bigger score than 30p. So yeah, but this is fun. If you're a Ron Howard completist, definitely go and see. And I had a lot of fun watching this. You know, 84 minutes flew by. It felt like it was 40, if I'm honest.
It really did fly by. It's one of those that it's just fast-paced, and you're just excited for the next thing, the next ridiculous event, and then it's over, and you're like, oh, I'm gutted it's over. And to be fair, because this isn't a sequel, but it's the second movie the first movie that Ron Howard did on it, like directed on his own, but the second movie with that producer that you mentioned. The first one was Eat My Dust, so I'm going to watch Eat My Dust now, like after this cast.
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, the pair of them sound like road movies, so I wonder if this is like a spiritual cousin. You know, I don't think it's a sequel, it might be a spiritual cousin. We've reached the end of the podcast here. I hope you've enjoyed it. You know, we definitely enjoyed watching this film. And definitely go seek out Grand Theft Auto. If you're new to the podcast, please like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter. Got a list on Letterboxd as well, the £1 Movie Podcast. Please download this, tell your friends, all that jazz. If you don't want to, it's fine, whatever. We've reached the end now, so yeah, thanks for coming along. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed Grand Theft Auto. Cheerios.